All guests have been unmuted. You will now rejoin the meeting.
Now it says my page is not found. Now tell me if you get on to the GoToMeeting. Do we have to join GoToMeeting to use this? Mark.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Jerome Lovato from the Secretary of State's office, Colorado Secretary of State's office. It's 1:30 p.m. Mountain Time, and so we will begin our risk limit audit participation group meeting. For those on the phone, there's a lot of background chatter. If you wouldn't mind, please muting your phone until you have a comment. That would be helpful to us, because here in our office, we're hearing a lot of background noise, and so just be beneficial to everybody, both on the line and in person. And so let's start with who we have here in our meeting room. We have Jesse Romero, Voting Systems Manager, Danny Casillas, the Voting Systems Specialist, Ben Rector. He's our representative from our IT department, Dwight Shalman. Hey, can we please mute the phones so we don't have to do a mass mute on the phones? Thank you. Dwight Shalman, a customer county support manager. Merlin Klotz, Douglas County Clerk and Recorder. Matt Crane, Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder. Kyle from Douglas County. Cody from Jefferson County. And who do we have online?
Good afternoon, Jerome. Janice is online.
All right, we are over in D.C. Harvey Bradscombe is here.
Derek Comer from Dominion.
Say that again.
Robin Cruz from Boulder County.
Neil McBurnett.
Pam Bacon from Logan.
John McCarthy, apologies for being late.
John McCarthy.
Brandy Ward and Garland from Washington.
Brandy Ward and Garland from Washington. Is that everybody?
Mark Lindemann. He's just sitting down. I won't have him.
Art and Dominion? Oh. Okay. All right. Well, it's good to have everybody in person and online. This is only going to be a 15-minute meeting because there's a lot of basketball games on right now. And we don't want to be here. We have brackets to care about, not risk limiting audits. For the record, just kidding, since this is going to be recorded, I was just kidding. So our agenda today is we're going to review the summary of the written comments submitted from our last conference. I'd like to walk through preliminary step-by-step of how to conduct a comparison risk limiting audit. I say preliminary just because it's We've talked about it quite a bit over the past few weeks, and we have some general steps that I'd like to cover sometime next week. By mid-next week, I'll post on our RLA site the document I'm working on for people to be able to comment on and redline and things like that. But I just want to cover it verbally today, but it will be posted on our RLA site. I'll also review the proposals that we have for conducting RLAs in counties that have legacy voting systems, and then provide an update on the development of our RLA software, and then also provide assignments for our next meeting. So sorry, we had a really weird noise here in our downtown Denver. It kind of threw me off. From our last meeting, I asked for counties that were able to submit resources for that they use for their current post-election audit, and received a couple of responses. Thank you to those counties. I also asked about, and by the way, everything is posted on our RLA site for things that are submitted to me for comments. And I also asked about two-page ballots, and the responses I received, pretty much everybody that responded said that they're just expecting a one-page ballot for this coming year's election. And then asked about experience with imprinting ballots, and I know that Jefferson County has some of that experience with the previous system they used, and Arapahoe County has attempted it on their current system, and so that's still something that's kind of in being tested and will be tested by, I know, of at least one county this late spring, early summer, for imprinting ballots. So we'll just have to wait to see how that all goes. And so thank you for those of you who did provide feedback, and for everyone else who provided comments on all the various topics we've been discussing over the past couple of weeks. So right now I'm just going to go through more of the step-by-step process for conducting a comparison RLA. And remember that this is based on the assumption that we're going to have, that we're going to audit just countywide contest. That may change. We may end up having a statewide contest, and we'll get to that later in the meeting. But right now, I just want to just work off of this assumption of using auditing a countywide contest. And so I divided it into two parts, pre-audit functions and then the actual audit. And so for pre-audit, I broke that down into the county responsibilities and then the Secretary of State responsibilities. And so for the county, for the county side, I have to appoint a bipartisan audit board that's currently required for our audits anyway, and defining county specific processes for batching ballots and keeping ballots organized. And also included in here is also for counties to define their batch size before the election. As this goes, it doesn't have to be exact, but it's just something that would be a best practice. And then for the Secretary of State, we have select the contest or contests to audit and defining the risk limit. And so these are the preliminary things that are done before the audit actually happens. And then then getting into the actual audit, so as the ballots are scanned, and the way it's being proposed for right now is they have to keep the ballots in the same order in which they're scanned, or if they have the capability to imprint ballots, that can be an option. The county will create a ballot manifest, and this will consist of the county ID, the scanner or tabulator ID, batch number, and the number of ballots in the batch, and then they'll establish chain of custody for these ballots and secure and store them, like just like they do right now. And so then the timelines are going to be different for the counties that are on listening. The timelines are going to change from the way we currently do our post-election audit. So for those who aren't familiar with our process, our office has 48 hours to randomly select voting equipment for counties to audit, and so now that time frame, we're not going to comparison RLA not select voting equipment, but then time frame wise it'll start, the audit will start 9 days after the election, and so at that point the county will print their summary report and compare that to the ballot manifest to ensure that the number of ballots cast are identical. And then by 11:59 p.m. on the 8th day after the election, the counties will be required to send their cast vote record and ballot manifest to our office, and they'll submit it by way of the RLA software that we will be using. And on the 9th day after the election, we'll have a random seed and go through and randomly select ballots to be audited and send that to the counties. And then beginning on the 10th day after the election, or in this year's instance, I believe it's November 17th, the audit board, the county's audit board, will take our information and select the ballot and compare that to the CVR and send the results back to our office. And from there, we will determine, the SOS will determine if additional auditing is needed based off of the results and the reports from the counties. And then if doesn't need to be any additional auditing, and the county will send their final results and any other pertinent data to us, and the audit will be over. If there are discrepancies, we still need to discuss next steps for discrepancies, because there can be various types of discrepancies, so that'll be something we will have to discuss, and figuring out what's next, and then what that time frame looks like. Since this year, Canvas is on November 24th, which is the day after Thanksgiving. We will have to discuss the timelines, and when I say we, I mean internally here at the Secretary of State's office, figure out kind of what works best for the counties and us for the timelines here for the risk limiting audit. So that's still to be determined. With all that being said, does anybody have any initial thoughts or comments or questions on what I just went through? First of all, I've been going back to contests. So if we don't have a statewide contest, we're doing this based off of the assumption that there will be a countywide contest. So with that, are there, it looks like Dwight has a comment or a question.
Yeah, this is Dwight Shulman from the Secretary of State's office. Jerome, you just read through an outline of the steps and timelines. Is that document on the website now, or is that, I think you mentioned this, is it going to be posted?
Yeah, I wanted to see if the what I have here in front of me is what is everybody is thinking or generally thinking, and if anything's off, I'd rather revise it before posting, and I will post it by midweek next week for additional comments and or questions.
Jerome, this is Janice out at Pickin. Can I ask one question on the timeline? Are you expecting the cast vote record to include everything? So when you say that we have until 11:59 on the eighth day to send the cast vote record, we are receiving up to 4:30, anybody who's going to drop off a cure ballot, et cetera. Then what we do is the next day, the ninth day, we bring in judges to process any our provisionals, cure ballots, and any ballots from other counties in case we have cross-jurisdictional elections, who send us ballots that they might receive. That's when we cast and clean everything up. So what I can provide you at the end of the ninth day are all ballots cast in my election, but I'm not able to do that at the end of the eighth day. And I don't know if there's other counties on this phone. Maybe they do it different, and maybe there's something I'm missing.
Janice, this is Pam Bacon. We do it the same as you do in Logan.
You know, and we're rushing it. We're going to be rushing it to get it to you the ninth. We're counting on judges to be scheduled on that ninth day to come in. But, you know, we can pound it out for you. But all things perfect, we can pound it out for you.
Thank you, Janice. That's really helpful for us to actually hear what's happening in the counties during these time frames. And thank you too, Pam. Is there any other counties? Would any other counties like to chime in? So Kyle, we can hand the microphone to you, please.
This is Kyle from Douglas County. We're kind of in the same
boat. This is Neil in Colorado. I don't know if there are any other.
Hey, we just Kyle here in the our Aspen conference room is speaking. So we'll have Kyle and then whoever was just talking on the phone. So go ahead, Kyle.
Yeah. So we would be waiting until the ninth day as well to do all that. So we're going to be kind of in the same boat, rushing to get that information to you guys.
Thank you, Kyle. And who was just on the line?
So this is Neil in speaking from the conference room with a bunch of us in D.C. And is the quality of my voice okay? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Great. So I just wanted to say that personally, I would really appreciate being able to see the printed version. I couldn't quite follow all the aspects of what you were saying. You did it. Is it something you can put on the screen, or is it something?
I can't right now, Neil. It's just a rough draft on a piece of paper in front of me, but I will have it this exact document posted online. Probably. Well, I'm going to shoot for close of business Tuesday next week.
Well, just for now, I'll interject that I heard something about how discrepancies are handled. And there are a number of different aspects to handling discrepancies, but at one end of the spectrum, the statistics work at if you either confirm that the ballot was interpreted correctly and tallied correctly, or if you can't, and there can be a number of reasons that you either, for privacy reasons, don't want to expose it, because we picked one of the ones that was a rare ballot that is hard to get, or if it's, you know, for some other reason inaccessible, or whatever. The nice thing about most of the software that we have is that it can, or the statistical approaches we have, is that it can handle discrepancies automatically and kind of automatically gives you a way to appropriately expand the sample as needed. So we don't have to have too many discussions about statistically how to handle it, but there are obviously all kinds of approaches to how to make sure that you've gotten the right ballot and the correct style and so on to try to help resolve them if you can. I'd love a chance to comment on the printed version when we get to see that.
And this is Harvey Branska. So what I heard was a little bit vague about what the county actually does when they open the ballot and look at it. And I wanted to make sure it's clear that the interpretation of the contents of that ballot by the people who are there is what gets uploaded to the Secretary of State and not a go or no-go message, match or no match.
Okay. Thank you, Harvey and Neil. Neil, I have a question about when you're talking about software being able to handle these discrepancies, would you mind talking more about that and giving a more clear explanation, and then also if you wouldn't mind providing a written comment regarding that, because it just isn't clear to me on just saying that we have software that'll be able to handle this.
So yeah, this is Neil, and you can still hear me.
Yes.
If you use the Philip Starks tool online that you've already used in a number of pilot elections to date, pilot audits. If you tell it how many discrepancies you have and what type they are, whether they actually made it look like the winner's margin was bigger or smaller, the tool will say, oh, that fits within our existing sample, or, oh, it looks like then you need to maybe select a couple more ballots, or it has a way of just mathematically ensuring, the whole purpose is to ensure that the risk limit is met, and if there are discrepancies, it typically means that you need to do a little more sampling in order to meet that risk limit. So the beauty of of Philip Stark's approach is to be able to handle discrepancies gracefully, and it just isn't a big deal. There were discrepancies in Boulder's 2010 audit. These were batch audits, so they were even more kind of graceful in the face of discrepancies. We had a discrepancy, but it didn't matter because the margin was wide enough that the sample size already was large enough to handle it. So the software can handle dealing with discrepancies, key component of it.
One of the challenges that we'll have if the state's going to serve as the central audit authority or whatever it's going to be called, is the looping that will take place if there are discrepancies, because we do have such tight timelines, and say we have county has a discrepancy and then it says okay, audit these whatever 5, 10, 20, 200 more ballots is the time frame of that, and then if they have more discrepancies after that and the software says, okay, audit more, I mean, we can realistically go past the canvas deadline here. So that to me just is a challenge, and it's nothing we have to solve today, but it's something we do have to solve. And I'd appreciate any proposals on how that can be handled.
Absolutely. This is Philip. Can I jump in?
Sure.
For the comparison audits, you can set the initial sample size to anticipate that you will find discrepancies at various rates, and in fact, the online tool does that. So, if you think that if you want to hedge against the possibility that one in 500 ballots is going to show a discrepancy of some kind, you can build that into the design so that if you only see errors at that rate, you can still stop. And that's built into the tool as it stands. The tool also, as it stands, says if you get to a point where your error rate exceeds what you budgeted for in the original design of the audit, it can say how many more ballots would I need to look at on the assumption that I continue to find errors at the rate I've already found them. So that should prevent you from having to escalate more than once, unless something really is seriously wrong with the tabulation, in which case that's kind of the whole point.
And I'll just note that there are, I would fully anticipate that the software we have available or other things, the basic information we can make available to election officials, even if the software, you know, is offline for whatever case, would be able to give immediate feedback. If there's a discrepancy in a ballot, immediately say, oh, you know, either you can investigate that and figure out that you just happened to miss the ballot and need to pick the right one or whatever, or you can anticipate that there would be, in real-time feedback, that there would be an additional number of ballots. They would tell you exactly how many, depending on the circumstances you need to sample. So we could have that. The whole goal, I think, of having a good Audit Central web tool would be to be able to upload the results and immediately find out how they were interpreted. Discrepancies, by the way, are pretty rare in my experience. And so exactly as Philip was saying, if you budget for some of them, and it's only in the case where, and if you budget for some of them and you don't see those, you might be able to stop early. So it's not like there's a penalty for planning to be able to select a few more just as a fail-safe. But if you enter an unusual circumstance, then we shouldn't have to escalate more than once. Because
so,
unless things get even
stranger. Let me just clarify one thing that Neil just said, which is you can stop early if you don't see the discrepancies, but in order to be able to do that, you have to audit the ballots in the order in which they were selected. If you sort them to make it easier so that you're only going into one stack of ballots once and you're auditing everything you've been requested to audit from that stack, then even if you don't find discrepancies, you're sort of committed to auditing everything that you selected in the first round. The other thing, you know, there's several things that can lead to discrepancies. One is a genuine misinterpretation of voter intent by the voting system. And, you know, that's likely to happen, more likely to happen in the case that the voter doesn't follow instructions properly, makes a bad mark, makes a light mark, has a hesitation mark, something like that. And you can kind of anticipate how often that's likely to happen based on experience. A second, you know, source of error would be that the software is actually misconfigured in some, you know, more drastic way. That's pretty unlikely to escape logic and accuracy testing, so that seems implausible most of the time. If it does happen, then that's, you know, that's a red flag and you want to correct it. And the last source would be getting the ballots out of order so that the audit you're balloting is not, doesn't correspond to the cast vote record that you know, that it should be corresponding to. And that is, you know, that kind of paper handling piece of it may end up being the largest source of discrepancies. Ron Rivest suggested an extremely low-tech solution for this that I think is brilliant. And if it complies with Colorado statutes, I think it would be a great thing to do. His idea is when you have the ballots in a stack, you basically draw a diagonal red line on the across the edge of the stack of paper. And if you draw a thin line and the ballots get dropped, you can get them back into their original order to get to restore the diagonal red line relatively easily compared to any other method that I can think of. So if that's something that if writing on the edge of a ballot, literally on the, you know, the thin side of the piece of paper is okay under Colorado law, that seems like a really good safeguard.
Yeah, it's something I think we could look into and maybe even, well, I know we can test it since we have a Dominion system in our office. So I'll probably be in touch with you, Philip, or you, Ron, within the next few weeks as we get more familiar with the system internally to look at that option. Dwight has a comment.
So I just wanted to, just on the discrepancy issue, well, before I get to that, let me just mention, I think when you were reciting timelines, Jerome, I was busy writing, so I may have missed it, but isn't it true that we would also need counties, if we push back our deadlines by a day, so that counties are required to complete counting all ballots and uploading CVRs and ballot manifests by 11:59 p.m. on the ninth day after the election, do we not also need them at the same time to give us a final election night reporting upload so that we have final margins?
Well, we can get that from the their summary reports too. We don't necessarily need the ENR information.
But then we run the risk of the data on ENR being out of whack with the data in the CVRs, which, I don't know. It just seems to me that if they've completed counting and they've given us their CVRs, they might as well go ahead and upload a penultimate ENR upload. Just food for thought.
This is Rob from Boulder, and Hillary Hall is going to join us any minute now, and she asked if there's any way to put off the discussion of ENR reporting until she's here. She would appreciate that, but I don't know if that's going to be possible. I just wanted to include
sure.
That.
I don't see any problem with that. I was just throwing it out as perhaps another task that we want to put on that ninth day.
Yeah, and I think that's something we need to discuss internally at our office. Just due to a lot of other moving pieces that are associated with ENR, one being that we may have a new ENR system for this year. So I'm comfortable putting that, just tabling that discussion, and we could even talk about it in our next meeting. But I think we just need to have internal discussions about ENR and ENR timelines. Just because of past experience.
So the other thing I wanted to mention is just on the discrepancy issue, I basically agree with Philip's assessment of the types of discrepancies we're likely to encounter. I think the most common discrepancy will be the inability to physically locate the paper ballot that corresponds to a randomly selected cast vote record. And Jerome, if you could just click on the website on the Pickens County comment submission. I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to the fact that some of our counties have kind of anticipated this. In Pickens County's comment in paragraph 3, go back up. They are proposing a pretty simple protocol just to ensure that, you know, the piece of paper they've selected actually corresponds to the randomly selected CVR. And I think adopting, and also mentioned that Larimer County in its submission this week proposed something very similar. It seems to me that the rule should require the counties in the ballot location aspect of this to adopt a similar protocol to try to minimize the number of ballot order discrepancies that we have to deal with. And I think these are both two really great common sense solutions to that.
Thanks, Dwight. Is there any other any further discussion on this topic? Okay, so the next next item I want to get to is the.
Go ahead.
Mr. Ron, I have a question.
Okay.
You talk about timeline. So one of the things that would be nice to have in this whole process. Would
excuse
be
a, me, Ron. You're
yes.
It sounds like you're really far away. So it's kind of hard to hear you.
Nothing you can do about it.
Is my mic on? Can you hear me better now?
Yeah, that's better.
That's a bit better. It would be nice to have a dry run of the whole audit process. And I'm wondering if you got that in your timeline somewhere where we have everybody, at least I'm sending anybody to Dallas or something to do a dry run. I worry about trying to hold in for the first time live, just after the election day. And so I'm just wondering if you got that plan in your timeline and so when that might be.
I actually discussed that with our deputy director of elections yesterday, really briefly. And so we haven't given it a lot of thought, but I think we need to. One thing we are doing is starting next Wednesday, we are doing regional county trainings for RLA. Just discussing the general concept and some of the things that are known, and then throughout the summer we will be doing on-site county trainings, and so I at some point I agree that we should do a dry run, but we'll have to coordinate that internally and then with the counties. To see what time frame works best, because there's I know there's a lot on their plates and our plate, and so we'll have to discuss that time frame of when we could possibly do a dry run of this. I think that's a good idea, but I think we just need to discuss that more thoroughly. So thank you for the suggestion.
Thank you.
Okay, so I do want to talk about the and review the alternatives that were proposed. Mark Lindemann and Harvey sent pretty much the same type of proposals, and then Larimer County was very similar to these four. One of these four, and so I just wanted to just go over this briefly, and it will be a part of the assignment for the next meeting. But the first one that I want to talk about is the ballot polling option. So there was the ballot polling, hand count, batch comparison audit, and then. What Mark termed the modified or transitive ballot level comparison audit, or in other terms, a parallel scanning option. And so these were the four that were proposed, and I'd like to just kind of discuss these briefly. And for those that have more experience with some of these than others, I'd like to get your input. So starting with the ballot polling audit, Philip, just for the sake of everyone on the call, will you please go over how a ballot polling audit works?
Sure. I mean, you can think of it as an exit poll, but instead of asking voters how they voted, you're asking the ballot who it shows a vote for in whatever contests are under audit. So you just select ballots at random and record who the votes are for. And the audit stops as soon as it sees a large enough majority for the reported winner that it would be really implausible to see such a big majority if that person hadn't really won. Depending on the actual margin in the contest, the number of ballots that you need to draw can be either small or large. It's a random number of ballots you end up drawing because you keep going until you get strong evidence, but you can anticipate what the workload is likely to be based on the reported margin, on the assumption that the reported margin is about right. The nice thing about ballot polling audits is that they don't require cast vote records. They don't require any detailed reporting from the voting system at all. They just require a ballot manifest so that you know if you want to draw a ballot at random and you know how many ballots there are, and you know if I want to look at ballot 1,297, you know that that's the 15th ballot in the 32nd box. So that's basically all that's required. The reporting for that ought to be straightforward. Disadvantage is that as the margin gets smaller, the workload goes up much faster than it does for a comparison audit. So the number of pieces of paper you have to touch goes up very rapidly. I worked out the math. So the tool that we have online for ballot polling audits assumes that you're drawing ballots with replacement. That is, you could end up drawing the same ballot more than once. Of course, you only have to look at it once if you do. But that doesn't take into account the fact that we're really drawing from, you know, finite groups of ballots, and there are some counties that don't have a whole lot of ballots, or at least don't have a whole lot of ballots in a particular contest. And so the workload can be reduced if you take that into account. I worked out the math for that last week, and I can provide an improvement to the tool that does that, and I've got Python code that does that if people are interested. So the short version of the story is it doesn't require any special reporting from the voting system. Every county that has paper in principle could do this. The workload is modest if the margin is large. If the margin gets small, the workload can end up being really clobbering you.
Thank you, Philip. I think that was a better explanation than me attempting to hack at it. And for those who are on the GoToMeeting, I pulled up Mark Lindemann's comments that address these, and he also includes advantages and disadvantages of the various methods. And so the next option is hand counting. And frankly, I don't see that as an option, and I don't think any of the counties will. But it was a proposal, so I don't really want to spend a whole lot of time on that. And this is number two that we're looking at, which is the batch comparison audit. And from my understanding, it's pretty similar to how counties currently audit, and I say similar because it's not exact, but the general idea is to audit batches instead of specific ballots. And Merlin, I think this is something that you also proposed, or something close to it, right? Okay. Oh, you got it.
If you read my notes that are attached, we got them up late. I'm sorry, Dwight. I think I missed getting them to you on time.
You got them with me. You didn't get it.
Okay. I've had some email issues, so I assumed it was me. Anyway, if you read it, it goes through in rather detail. I think the biggest issue we've got with, from my perspective, on our current batch comparison audit is I don't believe our sample size is big enough. My numbers look at we need, instead of being pulling five batches, we need to be pulling at least 10, maybe 15 batches in order to get an adequate sample size for. And to me, the target is a 95% confidence index that we're within plus or minus 3% on the interval. So I think our sample size is weak. right now. Other than that, I think that we reach a pretty good, when you look at the totality of an audit protocol, it includes everything from the Secretary of State controlling the software and the hardware on through. And so I think that's what gives credibility to a batch audit. A batch audit doesn't stand on its own, but in context of everything else from security cameras, everything that we do, I think it gives credibility to what we're doing.
Thank you, Merlin.
Hey, this is Mark. I just want to clarify, first of all, that these particular comments are a collective effort, so that will be background. Further, certainly none of us imagines that every county
Hey, Mark. Excuse me, quick, Mark. I think if you guys are all in the conference room there, it's just, if you wouldn't mind speaking closer to the microphone or something, it's just, we're just having a hard time hearing on this end.
Thanks, that's helpful feedback because we're sort of blowing ourselves out, so it's helpful to have the reminder.
I don't mean to interrupt you, but it's just, it's really hard to hear. I mean, looking around the room, I'm not the only one with messed up ears.
Is my good right here? This sounds pretty good in our room.
So whatever Mike Harvey's using, I think you should use, because we could hear him pretty well.
Okay, that's great. Is this better?
Yeah, it's a little better. But yeah, if you could be a little louder.
Okay, maybe I'm just running frequency. So briefly, what I was saying about hand counts, no one supposes that every county would hand count, but you know, part of the thing we were wrestling with was whether different counties could use different solutions. As far as batch level comparisons, you know, as we laid out, the drawback is that the ballots within a batch aren't really independent samples. So basically, 11 batches don't necessarily tell you that much more than 11 ballots in a ballot level comparison audit. That's a pretty fundamental problem. It's really hard to get to a risk limiting audit that way.
Thank you, Mark. I mostly understood what you were saying. And it's not a knock on you. It's just the sound quality of the speaker or phone that you're on there.
This is Philip. Can I come in
yes,
briefly? So when we were doing the pilots in California, we initially started doing batch level comparison audits. That was kind of the paradigm. And what we found was that at least for the particular contests we were auditing and the margins we were looking at and so forth, it didn't really save any effort over ballot polling audits, which have a lot lower setup costs. And moreover, if a jurisdiction doesn't physically store its ballots in batches that are also batches for which the voting system can make a report, for instance, precincts, then you can't really do a batch-level audit without sorting your ballots into homogeneous batches. So a batch-level comparison audit, I think, will be incompatible with the current way that many Colorado jurisdictions handle their paper. It would require, for instance, for vote by mail, sorting the ballots by ballot style or by precinct before scanning them so that the batches that they're scanned in are batches for which the system can make reports.
And this is Neil, if you can hear me. I just wanted to expand on that. I think the major problem that we've had and that Boulder County demonstrated is that while you can do risk-limiting audits, if it's not too close to contest with a batch approach, the difficulty is often getting, what you need to have is the batch tabulations published before you do the selections of which batches to audit. And so I recall there being one of the submissions this time around where the suggestion was to figure out what was selected. I might have misunderstood this because I haven't had a lot of time to read all this, but you can't
find out what's selected and then take a batch and put it through a calculator and get the system count for that, because you're not actually comparing, you don't actually have the count from the original tabulation, and it might have been done on a different device or under different circumstances. You really need to publish all that and know it all before you do the selection. But on the other hand, I would say that there are absolutely circumstances under which counties might be able to get those tabulations, as Boulder has done, and as we figured out cleverer tricks with some of the systems that might allow us to get that. And so I really like the way that Mark laid out a number of options, and there might be counties that would say the way that we can best contribute to this audit is to do a batch comparison, or is to do a full hand count, or, you know, it's at their option, whether it's going to be used for them. The biggest problem with the ballot polling option, when it's a tight contest and if you're the only county doing that contest, is the unpredictability of how much sampling you have to do. So, as documented in Mark's paper, if it's a pretty close election, you might end up needing to poll three times as many ballots as your kind of initial estimate was. And that's just a difficult thing to deal with from a logistics standpoint. But what I think we all agree is that the easiest way to move people towards the efficient ballot level risk limiting audit is to gain that experience of just the processing of being told what ballot to pick using a ballot manifest, no CDRs, just a ballot manifest to go and randomly pick the selected ballot and kind of plug it into the system, potentially not getting all the risk limitation formally that we want, but at least knowing what you'll need to do next year when you actually have CDR equipment or something like that. We can learn a lot from using the ballot polling approach, regardless of kind of how far we go with the selection and the risk limitation.
Thank you.
This is Hillary from Jerome, when you have a sec. Hillary from Boulder County. I was just going to add on a bit to that.
Go ahead.
And again, I can add on more if this looks like a route we're going to go down. There are additional challenges, Neil. I think you hit on some of the big ones. And one of them is the size of batches that you run, especially for heart systems, run and then have to, burn an MBB so that you have the cast vote records for that particular batch that were actually accumulated on election night. So that was one of the reasons the larger our elections got, the more time to creating a small enough batch that interfered with it. So more there if this is one of those approaches we want to take, but at least to put that on the table as well.
Thank you, Hillary. I know you all have a lot of experience with that, so that your input is helpful. Merlin?
Yeah, the batch comparison gives you some feedback where for all contests where if you're doing the individual ballot chase for many contests, you could conceivably be pulling several hundred percent of your ballots to batches to look at the ballots you need. So if we're looking at strictly a single contest, you make some sense. But if you're looking at having some confidence in all the contests, that's where the batch comparison audit gives you some benefits.
Thank you, Merlin. Dwight?
So I just want to make sure I understand. I believe that, so what we're talking about here are alternatives to ballot level comparison audits for counties who in 2017 and in future years will continue using their legacy systems. Basically, the two systems involved are HART in its various configurations and Premier at this point. And I think for both of those systems, based on what Hillary said with respect to HART, in the Premier system as well, I think you can generate a, quote, batch level results report from this system, but like HART with the MBB, the county needs to have a sufficient number of memory cards to be able to swap out memory cards for distinct batches. Otherwise, there's no way in the Premier system, to my knowledge, that you can generate a batch-level results report. And I'm just throwing that out there because I know Larimer County is on the line and Yolanda Medina is the premier whisperer in this state as far as I'm concerned. And I'm just wondering if I'm remembering this correctly. Sorry, my mic just timed out.
Well,
so Larimer, if you have anything to add on the premier capabilities, we'd be interested in hearing them.
Hi, Dwight. You're so kind. This is Yolanda. So you can do a batch report. We currently use a central count environment, and the way that we can see that you would accomplish that is to make a copy of the database and then delete. I know that makes everybody cringe, but delete the batches that you are not auditing and create a database just with batch reports from the selection of ballots that has been made. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
But you would still have to basically kind of force the system to do what you want by copying the database with all results, then deleting the results you don't want so you get down to a single batch that you can report for.
Correct.
And you have to do that for every single batch before the audit starts, not only for the batches that are selected, because you have to commit to those batch subtotals before you audit. It's just not workable.
Right.
Yeah.
You're correct. That sounds correct. A little ugly, but I appreciate the technical guidance, Yolanda. Thanks.
This is Neil. I just also wanted to commend folks to the write-up that Mark Lindemann did, trying to clarify some of the really tricky details. There are a lot of different forms of statistics being used here, and there's a good write-up. And if any of that is unclear, please come back to us, because we can get the folks that really understand this to clarify, I think, any of the statistical principles involved.
Well, I appreciate everybody's feedback on this particular topic, because it seems like we're mostly in agreement regarding how it will function, and it may be probably the best solution we have for the counties that can't produce CBRs. The last one I wanted to talk about was the parallel scanning option, and essentially it's using COTS scanners and another software to produce cast vote records for each of the ballots cast. And I don't having done that in a couple of pilots, I just don't see that as a feasible solution for the counties, and for price and then for cost and associated with it, and then other variables that could cause the county to have to answer questions that they shouldn't have to answer. For instance, if there's a mismatch between what the first voting system reported and then what this second scan reported. So I think just based off of the feedback, for the counties that can't produce cast vote records, batch comparison might be the way to go. If anybody else has any other options or can think of any other alternatives, if you could just provide written comments to me, or even if building off of any of these other options, if you can provide those written comments as well.
Jerome, I just want to pause for a second and just make sure I understood what you were saying and whether a decision had been made or not. Because I would like to talk about maybe at a future meeting or see readings on it. I didn't see that the the sampling, I don't have the name in front of me, but the first option that we talked about that Professor Stark explained, why is that one off the table, or are those the two we're comparing, that option and then batch? Because there are a lot of things with batch that
we have a
pretty extensive experience, and I don't know if I'd recommend that for a small county.
Nothing is off the table.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, and nothing is on the table either.
Right, exactly.
I think before we come to a decision, probably for whatever option is selected, it'd be best if we can do some type of pilot or testing for those counties that are going to use that option, so that they could actually see what it really will look like. Because I think we all know that it's one thing to have stuff on paper, and it's something different when we actually have to do the work. And so I think whatever option or options we do go with, we will need the counties will need extensive training on it, so that when we're working with real election data, that they have a comfort level with that and an understanding. Since for my office, we will need to provide the appropriate support come audit time. And so that's something to keep in mind, and we haven't discussed a whole lot, is that for any alternative options is making time this spring and summer to have good procedures and training for these counties. Since we will absolutely need that and that type of support. Dwight.
So this is Dwight.
Yeah, that's
so,
a really good point, is the more options, the more support, and the more systems we'll need in place to support the county. So, okay, thanks, Jerome.
Yep. So, but the bottom line, I think what Jerome was saying is that the two most feasible options to handle the legacy systems are either the ballot polling option, which Philip described, and then the batch comparison audit that I think we all agree is maybe not ideal, but it is perhaps still viable for the legacy counties.
This is Harvey. The reason why the hand count is out there as an option is because I believe there are two counties that actually do the original count as a hand count. I think it's unlikely they'll be using machines for the audit. That's all.
Yeah, there's one county that does hand counting right now. Is there any other discussion on alternative options? Okay, so
I'm sorry, was transitive audit still on the table? I'm not a huge fan, but
I don't think so. Matt, we have Matt Crane, and he's Arapahoe County has done pretty much every RLA type of audit we've attempted here. Matt, do you have any feedback on doing that type of audit? And you can even describe your experience with it.
All right. Thanks, Jerome. This is Matt Crane, Arapahoe County Clerk and Recorder. We did try this. When we did this in 2013, we took the Dominion ballots and then rescanned them in on Clear Ballots device or on Clear Ballot system. It was Sequoia at that time. That's right. Thank you. And that worked pretty well. We tried it again in 2014 using an open source software that it took a long time to get the ballots to be able to be read into the new software, so we weren't able to get all the way through the audit and complete the audit. The modified transitive is a lot more time and labor intensive, having to rescan the ballots and that kind of thing. So from where I'm coming from, I would say that the batch comparison audits are the would be better, or the ballot polling audit would be better than that. But the other is definitely doable. There's more time and a higher level of effort involved. And depending on the size of the election and the size of the county, you have to make sure that you have enough, equipment and people to be able, so it could drive a little cost that way too.
This is Neil, and I'll just note again kind of the diversity. We have such wonderfully diverse counties in Colorado, and there might be some that are very small that some vendor might want to support and get some goodwill from supporting that. So I wouldn't completely leave it off the table. Maybe the best way to do this is to have a rule that says here's kind of what we expect to be able to support, and then as we've done in the past, and I assume will be part of the rule, to allow counties to propose a different alternative, and if they seem like they can really do it, as Boulder was back in 2008, to accommodate things that way. I also just wanted to note one other thing about the lost my train of thought. Carry on.
Jerome, this is Matt Krenig. I would just say, if we're talking about leaving that on the table, I think when we look at the ruler, however we do that, we should make sure that whatever third-party software you would use for that, if that's the case to do it that way, there needs to be plenty of lead time to be able to make sure that it can read the ballot. Because, again, in 2014, when we did this, and Dr. Stark, you were here for that, it was a pain to be able to get the new software to read our ballots, and we lost, unfortunately, a lot of the time to be able to complete the audit to everybody's satisfaction because it took so long to get the new system to read our ballots properly. So we, in rule, we need to address that.
Thank you, Matt.
This, Philip, I completely agree. We need to vet the software that I'm going to suggest that, ultimately, I think we should leave as much choice in the counties as we possibly can. And counties that have legacy systems that don't support ballot level comparison might choose to do a ballot polling audit for contests that have, if the contests that they need to work on this November have wide margins. But then if the contest ends up having a narrower margin, it could be that the savings in labor in touching fewer ballots outweighs the cost in labor of scanning all the ballots again, and it could end up being more economical to do a transitive audit. So if there were a way to have scanners on hand and to have done some work with the software to make sure that it can interpret the ballots that those counties are using, you could in some sense have a SWAT team come in and scan the ballots in a hurry to support a transitive audit if necessary. But if the margins are wide, a ballot polling audit would be a lot less work.
I agree with that, Mrs. Neal. And the other thing I was going to say before is that I still hold out the possibility that some of the existing vendors could provide options with their software to produce dash counts or to produce even cast vote records. So they could win a lot of points in my mind and points around the country as we try to promote auditing. We're here at the Election Verification Network Conference in D.C., and there were lots and lots of people here touting the importance of and different options for doing audits of elections. And so the more vendor recognition and appreciation and support we can get for good audits, the better. So don't give up on asking the vendors for good support there.
We are going to give up on them this year, since it any kind of modification of software will have to go through certification, and that's likely not to happen this summer. So for sure, for this year, we can't throw in the towel on that. So Dwight, I asked Dwight if he can just talk more about kind of the ramifications of having so many options available and what it means to rulemaking and implementing on from our end.
So this is Dwight.
John McCarthy here, and I'm not.
Hold on. Excuse me. I not to just cut you off, but I couldn't understand who you introduced yourself as.
This is John McCarthy. I just wanted to try to clarify this thing about the transitive audit. It seems to some of us that if you invited Dominion and Clear Ballot, which already have these capabilities and which are already certified and you know work pretty well, that if you ask them whether they might be willing to demo that in one or more of these counties, that would be a possibility for the transitive audit.
Thank you, John. Dominion doesn't have that capability, and Clear Ballot is not certified. So I think you know that option has been used before, but I just don't really see how it will be feasible in the short time we have for this year's election. I'm not completely dismissing it, but that's just where we're at time-wise. So go ahead, Dwight.
So this is Dwight Shulman again. I did just want to just kind of let people know, at least from the people in our office, why we are appearing more receptive to some ideas and less receptive to others. There are two aspects to that. First of all, we do have to draft a rule, and the risk-limiting audit rule is probably going to be one of the longer, more detailed election rules ever adopted by this office because it's kind of the nature of the beast. It just takes an enormous amount of time to get it right, and the more options that we have to specify by rule, the longer the rule gets and the more time it takes us to write it. You know, that's an administrative inconvenience, but it's one of the things that we need to deal with in allocating our scarce resources as well. More of a concern here for me is when we think about the execution of this audit, let me just throw out some very rough numbers for you. We anticipate having just ballpark 50 to 55 counties on the Dominion voting system or the possibly the Clear Ballot voting system, which has a certification application pending in our office, in 2017. And the thing about both of those systems is they are capable of exporting a ballot level cast vote record. So, you know, both counties using either of those systems in 2017 would be required to do a comparison audit. Then we have, you know, roughly 10 to 15 counties that we expect will continue on their legacy systems for this year. And those are very ballpark numbers. These numbers are changing constantly, but just in terms of order of magnitude, that's, I think, what we're looking at. If we give counties the option to propose an alternative to us that we are somehow then involved with, we've got four guys up here who will be working on this stuff, probably in a pretty advanced stage of brain death by that point. And figuring out the nuances for the one-off counties is really going to be a challenge just from our resources. So we're not dismissing anything out of hand. It's just, you know, for Jackson County, hand count risk-limiting audit makes perfect sense because that's how they tabulate their ballots to begin with. For counties that will continue to use the Premier or Hart HVS systems, I guess our preference is to see if we can find one path that we support. But I do understand Philip's comment. Maybe the margin is determinative there as to what, you know, particular type of audit they want to use. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. Thanks.
Thanks, Dwight. That because that included with all of RLA is we do have a lot of counties transitioning to the Dominion voting system here shortly over the next couple of months, which will require at least 80% of our week for the next during that time frame, and so that's our own internal workload on top of developing rules for a risk limiting audit and ensuring that the counties are properly trained or as close to properly trained as we can get. We're going to do our best. And those are the real issues that we face at our office that we have to also be considerate of. And so if there isn't any more discussion about the options, I do want to leave that open for written comments if anybody has anything more to say on that. I'd like to move on to the next.
This is Leon. I'll just say thank you very much. That was really clearly stated, and I really actually do agree. And the main focus, I think, should be on the cash vote record counties because that's what we're really pioneering. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Neil. So the next topic is an update on our risk limiting audit software. So we are, Neil has sent some functional requirements to us, and we adopted some of those, and we're right now drafting a documented quote to have the risk limiting audit software developed. We will have this documented quote out within the next couple of weeks, and basically we'd like to just bid this to individuals or companies who would be able to help us develop this risk limiting audit software that we intend to use for this election. So that's being drafted right now, and we will have that out within the next couple of weeks. Just wanted to give an update on that. If anybody has any questions, you can call or email me if you have really detailed questions about it. And I can, if I'm not able to answer you immediately, I'll be able to provide an answer. And then the last thing for today, I just want to go over the assignments for our next meeting. I realized it took me a couple months, but I realized that it's better to just have stuff to show on the screen. And sometimes Word takes a while to upload. So we already talked about other options or methods for risk limiting audit for counties that can't produce cast vote records. And then what contests, I'd like to for the group to provide feedback on what contest or contests should be audited if a county doesn't have a countywide contest this year. I know we've mentioned it, and we've even asked the question. I've seen the question asked on several documents. But I'd like to get the input on this. It doesn't have to be today, but I'd like it in written comments, because we just don't know. If we don't have a statewide contest, and if some counties don't have a countywide contest, I'd like to get feedback on thoughts of what contests should be audited. And then the last one, if we have a statewide contest, and this is a question, just because we just don't know the answer, and I'm kind of puzzled by it, is that if we have a statewide contest and say, I put in this just example, 40 out of the 64 counties get ballot selected to audit, then what do we do with the other 24 counties? If we had a statewide contest and the math and everything says, okay, audit 100 ballots statewide, and a portion of those ballots don't show up, don't appear for any of the counties, what do we do then? Do we say that county's good because they didn't get selected? I don't know. I don't know the answer. But that's something we need to get answered, because if we do end up having a statewide contest and we choose the statewide contest to audit, what happens if a county doesn't get selected, if their ballots don't get selected? I don't know the answer to that. It just seems like it's a challenge, because at some point it seems like we would have to have some type of hybrid RLA or something. I just don't know. But I would like to know, because we need to get that figured out. And so if you could just provide those written comments to me. Did somebody have a question? Or
this is Harvey from D.C. And I just wanted to clarify that our understanding of the way we do this audit is choose a contest from which, by the margin, we would set the sample size for the audits of other contests. And because we're collecting the information off each ballot for every contest, all of the contests around those ballots will get audited to some degree, either to a risk limit or they will measure the risk. And so I think a better way to ask this question is to separate the idea of choosing the contest for which to set the sample size for the audits, and not say which audit or which contest would be audited, as if only one contest will get the benefit of the audit. That certainly wasn't our intention in writing the documents the way we did. So I just wanted to ask you if you wanted to ask that question or you want to clarify that.
Well. I need clarification then on, are we talking auditing every contest or looking at every contest? Maybe there's some miscommunication here. We're not talking about the same thing. But because you mentioned auditing every contest, and that to me doesn't mean I'm confused by when you say that we're auditing every contest, and I don't think I'm the only one who's confused. But
no, it's definitely lots of opportunity. I mean, the very word audit brings lots of people to a puzzled or frightened place. So I totally understand opportunity for confusion there. The way that I would phrase it is most anything that we do is some sort of an audit. So if we look at any contest and if we compare it to the original cast vote record or just assess it as a vote, we're in some sense gathering evidence about the election and coming to a better, more informed sense of what happened in the election and auditing the election. The purpose that I saw for this idea of taking the closest countywide contest is exactly as Harvey said, to decide what the initial sample size would be. And if you do that initial sample size based on some of the other contests that might only appear on some ballots in the county, it can be it's challenging to figure out exactly how to do that. And so our goal was to have some clear rule for deciding how many to sample. But once you've decided how many to sample, and I would think that we would also, just in general, if the county didn't have kind of a sample size setting contest like that, but we would just have some minimum number. I mean, I don't know what it is, and it doesn't, in my mind, have to be a large number, but just to be able to get value out of this whole process, and this county is going to set aside people ready to audit to sample some number of ballots, then on all those ballots that you sample, to go ahead and look at any contest that is still active in the language that we've used in some of the previous discussions. So the first few ballots, you know, if you imagine one of those judge contests, that judge retention has a very large margin. It only takes a handful of ballots in some of those cases to get all the confidence you need that the outcome is correct. After that, you can ignore those, and I expect our software to be able to tell you, oh, you don't have to worry about those anymore on the ballot you're looking at. But all of those times as you look at it, you would, in fact, be auditing. You wouldn't necessarily reach a risk limit. So the distinction is, are you a mandatory to audit contest? You commit to reaching a risk limit. The other contest, you just gather the evidence as it kind of passes in front of your eyes because the ballots are popping up and it's pretty easy to look at them. And you only really need to look at the ones that are still active. And most of the ones that you select in any typical audit, most of the contests will not be active. So you'll really only be looking most of the time at a few contests on each ballot.
Well, that still doesn't answer my question, though, because my question is that if we have a statewide contest, which we will have for sure in 2018, and for risk limit audits, I always hear, well, it's a random sample, and so then if you're saying it's random, but it's not, because then we're going to choose a minimum number of ballots, then it's not random at all, and so. You know, I'm open to correction if I'm wrong, but let me finish. Is that if we're random, it's a random sample, and we have a statewide contest that we say we're auditing a statewide contest only, not every down ballot issue. You know, we can say to look at the rest of the contest on that ballot that's selected, but we're only auditing a statewide contest. And there's a likelihood that some counties won't be selected. That's the question is do we say that's still okay and that's a valid audit, or what is the solution for that type of instance? And so that's the question is. Is this random sampling or not? Because if it's not random sampling and we're setting a minimum, then what other options of conducting an RLA are there? And it doesn't have to be solved right now, but I would like the written comments just for people listening to both live and then on the recording about the real possibility of this happening. Looks like, Dwight, you have a comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in real quickly. One thing I'd like to suggest, and you feel free to agree or disagree in your written comments on this issue, but I personally think it's important to give the counties the benefit of the bargain here. You know, we've done a random post-election audit that required lots of people and lots of time to audit really voting devices that didn't leave us with any statistical level of confidence with respect to the accuracy of the outcome, but it was what it was. And one of the benefits of a risk-limiting audit, if we are starting with one or, you know, more statewide contests, is that we reach a risk limit in the state, not in a county, in the state. And if that means that the random selection results in some counties not having to audit a single ballot, maybe I'm being too legalistic about this, but I think that's part of the deal. That's one of the benefits of a risk-limiting audit. Now, it doesn't mean that if those people are not initially randomly selected, that they can lock up and go home for Thanksgiving, because if we encounter discrepancies, we may have to pull more ballots and they be pulled into the statewide audit. But I do think the question that Jerome has posed here is legitimate, and you obviously know my spin on it at this point, but that's why we're asking for your take on it. So, thanks.
Okay, so I'd like to take a stab at it. This is Harvey. And I think the answer is clear. At least in this room, probably it's clear that we're going to be a statewide contest. We'd like to audit it, but it wouldn't be the only audit. But it'll be one contest only, perhaps, presumably. And indeed, if 24 counties didn't get chosen in the sample, they wouldn't be auditing for the statewide contest, but they would be included in it because they could have been sampled, so they would be part of the audit. It wouldn't have to do any work for that. But clearly, we should also, as a basis, start with a countywide contest, if there is a countywide contest. And you have asked what to do with if there's not a countywide contest. That is a very interesting question, and it does need some thought. But basically, we should agree to set the sample size for each county to the minimum margin countywide contest, and that sets the minimum sample size, or it sets a minimum, and perhaps we would like to increase that slightly just to make sure that that no county actually gets left out. But if each county is being audited, then there will be at least a ballot counted, that's for sure, because that's the nature of the audit. You can't do an audit of a within-county contest without looking at a ballot. So it seems to me that we should start out by saying we're going to audit countywide contests to a risk limit, and the sample size would be set for each county by the minimum margin contest. And then if there's a statewide contest, we would also do that. That would be easier. Probably we wouldn't be looking at any additional ballots in order to be able to reach the risk limit for the statewide contest, so it wouldn't involve any extra work. But the reason I posed the question originally is because I was hoping we wouldn't decide to audit a single contest regardless. We would audit at a sample size to achieve the minimum margin contest, and the contest with larger margins will come basically for free as a result of the work done for the minimum margin contest.
So I understand what you're saying, Harvey, and please let's revisit the arguments here in your written comments. The one thing I just want to remind you of is that at the very beginning, I encourage people to understand that this is going to be an evolving, iterative process. I think it's very important that we get to a baseline where we set the counties up to succeed and then make the audits more complex, more nuanced in the future. But, you know, we're the first state in the country to do this, and I personally have a lot of concerns about, you know, selecting a statewide contest and the countywide contest of the narrowest margin fresh out of the gate. So I understand there are competing concerns. I'm obviously not necessarily right, but I would ask you to bear in mind that the rule that we come out with this summer undoubtedly is not going to be the final version of this rule, because we are going to learn things, and we're going to improve, and we're going to make it better over time. That's my only thought. Thanks.
Hey, Dwight, this is Hillary. Just to add on to that, and maybe, again, I realize I'm a little late to the conversation. I've read up on everything, or most of it. Maybe it makes sense to clarify what does the audit look like when it's, quote, done and at its complexity, so that then we can back into it by, you know, as you're suggesting, taking it in phases to ensure the success. And again, maybe some of that is iterative. When we do them, we know more. But I don't know if we have, like, what that clear picture is of, or that we have the same picture of what a fully implemented risk-limiting audit in a state looks like.
So let's just leave it as, give us your thoughts, and Jerome, let me make a suggestion. We obviously don't have cast vote records for the 2015 coordinated, but could we take a look at the 2015 coordinated results on a statewide basis and on Harvey's proposal, the countywide contest with the narrowest margin in each county, and try to present something at our next meeting just showing the different complexities? Yes, I'm getting a thumbs up.
Yeah, we can look at that data and have something for the meeting 2 weeks from now.
Okay. This is Neil, and thank you. I mean, actually, the last few comments also helped me realize that some of the nuances that we're sort of asking. So I think these are great questions. We've already started that analysis. I've got something that I know isn't quite perfect yet, but to try to give you that estimate for 2015 data in almost all the counties. And we'll be happy to submit written comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Neil. One thing I realized is that I didn't add this assignments document to our RLA site, so I'll do that after this meeting for the counties and others to look at, those that are in the group. We have the document up on the go-to meeting, but I will add it to our website as well. So that's all we have for today. Thank you all for really, it seems like we're getting more and more documents as these meetings go on. So that's good. People are more interested in understanding it a little more. I would like to point everybody, the final thing, on our website, to a document, if I can find it. Oh, come on. There you go. That doesn't work in there. There it goes. Our internet is slow in this room. Susanna Goodman from Common Cause submitted a paper on, it's called Understanding, the link title is Understanding Risk-Limiting Audits. So I want to just publicly acknowledge her for sending this. It's basically risk-limiting audits in plain English. No offense to others who've worked on this, but I found it really helpful in explaining in the mock trainings I've done internally. I received a lot of good feedback on that, so I just want to share that with everybody and take a look at her document. I think it provides a good understanding of risk-limiting audits in plain English. And so I just want to point that out before we dismiss today. And so I want to thank you all once again for participating. If you remember to just send your comments directly to me, jerome.lovato@sos.state.co.us. The time is 3:10 p.m. Mountain Time. Hope you all have a good weekend, and we'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Thanks, Ron.
Yeah, thank you for including us from here in D.C.